Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 14 of the Today's Knuckleball Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Like every Thursday, I am Timothy King. You can follow me on Twitter at tking978. Joined every week by fellow writer Greg Jewett, and you can follow him at gjewett9. Greg, what's going on tonight?
Not much. I came in spite of your threats of singing.
I texted Greg earlier and told him that I was going to wing the first couple subjects here because I had a long day at work and it auto-corrected to how I was going to sing on the podcast tonight. So maybe at the end of the show, if we, Greg, what do you think? If we blow through everything here, maybe I can, we can do a duet or something.
I don't know. Maybe you should swing sing a little Sweet Caroline and change the karma for your website.
I knew that was coming. Yeah. That'd be that song is. If you go to a Red Sox game, oh, it's so annoying. But. Part of the culture there, but it's really
I won't tell my aunt. She's a huge Neil Diamond fan.
Okay, there you go. That song has been beaten to death in Boston. It's kind of like, they play it. It's not just a Red Sox thing now, too. They play it at Bruins games and everything. They actually play it at Lowell Spinners games, which is the single-A affiliate of the Boston Red Sox, and I live in the town that they play in, so every time you go there, they do the same thing as the Red Sox.
Oh,
kind of gets a little bit old. But, yeah, enough about the Red Sox. It's the dumpster fire. So, Steven Strasburg returned from the DL. Looks pretty good. Five innings, scoreless. The first time he has thrown a start this year without allowing a run. Four hits, a walk, six strikeouts, got a win. What do you think moving ahead with Strasburg? First of all, did you try to buy low while he was hurt, and were you successful?
No, I never really put out the feelers. I probably should have. I made the mistake this year. I told a couple people I would do a league, and I'm like spread thin. So between the writers' leagues and a couple of other ones, it's just too much. But, I thought about putting out the feelers, and I really probably should have followed through on that. But, he looked okay. The velocity was up. He seemed to have better placement on the ball. So maybe there was something to all of this, pushing through the injury and the bad mechanics. Which leads me to question, if this was a simple injury thing, why wouldn't they have just shut him down sooner? It's like the Nationals treated him with kid gloves years ago, and now it's like they're pissed at him or something. They're trying to make him pitch through it. I don't understand, but, the pictures that Zimmerman put up on Fangraphs and everything show that his stuff was all more back into place. So it might have just been that he needed a couple of weeks just to sit down and get things back together and work on the fundamentals and come back strong. So as he builds up arm strength, he can probably go deeper in the games. Hopefully he can maintain the velocity and improve. And if he does that, that definitely bolsters that pitching staff.
Yeah, I was actually half hoping, and this may sound bad, I was actually half hoping that he came out and struggled in the start because the offers that I put out there for Strasburg were unsuccessful in actually all my leagues. I don't own any shares of Strasburg anywhere. And so I did my best to try to get him wherever I could, and I just couldn't do it. My experience is that people who own Strasburg weren't willing to sell on him. Even in the league, I actually offered Shelby Miller straight up for Steven Strasburg, and this was like right after Strasburg went on the DL and got declined, which I was very surprised at, because Shelby Miller has been very, very good. But, like I said, it would have been probably easier for people who were trying to buy low that he came out and not threw a dud, but maybe he struggled a little bit just so that way kind of gave them a chance to capitalize on the fact that maybe it wasn't an injury and maybe there was something else going on, or maybe it was a more severe injury than it was. But pretty obvious now that if you're a Strasburg owner, or if you're trying to acquire Strasburg, it's not going to come cheap. So good to see him come back out, though, and have a successful start. It's pretty surprising, actually, what the Nationals have been able to do, more or less, without Strasburg, without Pfister. to a degree without the Jordan Zimmerman that they know, and you know, all the other guys, some of, a couple of which we'll talk about, but definitely good to see Strasburg come back out. If you're re-ranking today, where based on the start against Atlanta, where would you rank Strasburg if you had to rank them today?
I don't know. You know, I was actually thinking to myself that it's probably time to do like a second half re-ranking and see where guys are going to fit in. So based upon that, I'll probably still have them in like the mid to low 20s. I don't think I want to get him into the top 20 quite yet, but obviously he's a top-end talent if he's healthy. I'd like to see a couple of more starts so he could easily climb up another game or two, especially if he goes deeper and maintains. But the thing I like best was the one walk and six strikeouts. He wasn't putting people on base. He was having clean innings, and that's something that, you know, he was struggling with when he was pitching earlier before being shut down with the runners on, and then once runners got on base in the scoring position, the batting average against shot up for him. So that's something he and actually Clay Buchholz have both improved upon so far, so hopefully they can hold those going forward.
Yeah, and Strasburg gets the Phillies on Sunday, so that's going to be interesting. Probably.
Yeah, just like the Phillies, we're going to roll over for the Yankees or 1-2 out of 3.
Yeah, no, I know.
And the only one they'd be with Hamels. It makes sense of that.
Yeah. Seth Klein was tweeting about that. He's like, if Yankees fans think that we're a serious contender, we can't go out there and get, you know, lose 2 out of 3 of the Phillies. And I mean, he makes a good point, but. I know baseball's wacky like that, but obviously you're using him Sunday if you want him against the Phillies. So Jose Fernandez is going to be back in about a week now. I know we touched upon him last week a little bit with Seth, kind of get the injury perspective from Seth, you know, him having a background in the health field. But what are you expecting out of Fernandez when he comes back? I mean, are we going to be looking at Matt Harvey and getting unrealistic expectations from that? Or what do you think moving forward? What do you think he does when he's on his return?
Well, I mean, Jose Fernandez is super talented. He only threw 90 pitches the other day in his rehab start and struck out 10. But, of course, you know, what's funny is those are probably guys that are his own age. So I think he's going to be good, but I think there's going to be a couple of starts where obviously he might have to dead arm period or lose a little bit of his control and sharpness. So, you know, I don't think you can expect him to be a top 10 pitcher when he returns, but if you expect him to be more at the 25 to 30 level and you held him all the time, then absolutely, he's a great he's probably a very good starting pitcher three for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, I was going to touch upon that. I'd actually put him like in the SP2 category, but that might be a little bit of, you know, up with upside. But yeah, he's looked good. You know, albeit he's been pitching against high A guys. I don't know if you've seen ESPN's blurb about him on ESPN's fantasy client, but they say Fernandez is a 3.20 ERA, 1.95 FIP. And a 25-4 K-to-walk through 19.2 innings at high A. So that's pretty interesting. Pretty funny that ESPN's using FIP as a measurement for Fernandez's numbers at high A Jupiter. He makes his final start on Saturday, and we'll see him next week. So obviously, again, if you he's actually unowned in some leagues, which is kind of weird. But those are probably like 16 leagues. But yeah. No problem here. Tristan Cockcroft found that pitchers coming off Tommy John surgery. He did a column. I don't know if you read that. I think it was last year he wrote about it. He did like a study of all the pitchers that are coming off Tommy John surgery. And it was actually beneficial to use the pitchers immediately upon their return. So obviously, if you're on Fernandez, you're activating him when he starts, and you're gonna use him. So I wouldn't be afraid of, you know, holding him back if you do own him because he's coming off Tommy John. You know, the control might be a little bit of an issue, but I would deploy him as I normally would right when he gets back. Are you with me there?
Yeah, I only have him in one league, but it's a head-to-head, and that team needs pitching desperately. So I'll be looking forward to dropping one of my bottom end starters and getting him right in the lineup when he comes back.
Yeah, he's another guy I don't own anywhere. The majority of my
That's
league
the only
is
league this morning.
So, is it a redraft?
it is a redraft. It was a team where I was getting bets and thought I was being cool, and everybody was taking pitching. So then I decided at the last minute, crap, I better get a couple of stashes. So I grabbed Fernandez and a couple of other high upside guys trying to catch lightning in a bottle. So we'll see.
There you go. Yeah, I'm excited about it. Really good to have him back. Like, the game has so many young studs, and Fernandez is definitely one of them. So glad he is going to be back. I love your player note on Marco Estrada, and that note is Marco Estrada, really? And I watched that game. I had that game on MLB TV, and he was throwing the ball really well. And I'm sure you saw those Josh Donaldson, those couple of plays, especially that first one. Man, that was something, huh?
Mm-hmm. That's very cheater-esque.
Yeah, I think it was actually
just
better.
It's just amazing because last year, this is what everybody wanted Estrada to do last year. He was like a sexy preseason breakout pick for Milwaukee. And people were worried about the ballpark because he was a fly ball pitcher, and now he's having success in Toronto, which is probably a worse ballpark for a fly ball pitcher. The one thing that I could notice when I was looking at it is that this year he's throwing less fastballs, and he's using his cutter a lot more. So I don't know if the cutter is a new pitch to him. That's probably worth doing a little background research on. But he's given up 3 hits in his last 15 and two-thirds innings pitched. He only won one game in that stretch with 16 strikeouts, a .57 ERA, a .45 whip, and a .060 batting average against in those 2 games. So obviously he's on a heater, but for the season his ERA is 3.45. And his FIP, that's probably Eno Saris' influence at ESPN over there, his FIP is at 3.83. So, maybe the luck is in his K/9, which is 7.77. So if 7 is his lucky number, then Estrada can stay on the heater here.
Yeah, you're right. He's doing what he was supposed to do last year, this year. Surprisingly, though, his homer to fly ball is down. That's great, but I'd expect moving forward that a few more of those home runs are going to get out of there, especially pitching in Toronto. But it's like bizarro world in Toronto. Drew Hutchinson pitches well at home, and Marco Estrada is doing what he was supposed to do last year, this year for the Blue Jays, in a worse
spot. Yeah, Marcus Stroman last year pitched better at home, too.
Yeah, that's right. It's weird, very weird. Where are you adding Marco Estrada? Is he mixed league, kind of fodder yet?
What's that?
Are you adding Marco Estrada in any mixed leagues as of today?
I don't know. I'm actually going to have to, like I said, I'm actually going to try and when we get done with the podcast tonight, I noticed that uptick in cutters, so I kind of want to see his game log the last few times to see if that's something that's recent or if he's been doing it all season. But since he's transitioned to a starting pitcher for Toronto, he's been borderline one of their MVPs. As on the pitching front, he's really been helping save them, especially eat up innings for them while they're trying to add to that staff. So, I think he's worth a look now in 12-team or deeper. And maybe if you're desperate, I hate chasing wins, but in a 10-team league, you might want to look at him because Toronto's still going to go on a run here. They've been playing well in the past. They've been playing well the last couple of weeks, and I don't think that's going to stop with that lineup.
Yeah, and you talked about the wins. His last 5 starts, he got 4 wins. Of course, though, he didn't get a win in that near perfect game, but such is fantasy baseball. But he's been pitching really well, and people are noticing a little bit in there on ESPN. And I probably for me not a 12-team mixed league yet, but if it's a deeper league, I think you could probably go that route. So, Jose Altuve and Carlos Gomez are both dealing with very nagging injuries. Both, I own both in one league, and to say that it's frustrating would be an understatement. So let's start with Jose Altuve. What's the recent news on him?
He did play, and he had a couple last night. Let me see if he's in the lineup tonight. Of course, the MLB app will stop right at the moment I pull that up. Altuve's batting third tonight, so this is the second day in a row. So hopefully he's turning the corner. So as long as he doesn't come up lame in the, over the weekend, it looks like he'll be back. So that's a big boost for the Astros because they need contact. They can't lose one of their only contact hitters in the lineup. So that'll provide them a little more consistency. So Altuve seems okay, but Gomez sat out again today. Hopefully that's just so he can make it through the weekend. But the Brewers, I don't know if they're trying to keep him on the field, if they're trying to use him as trade bait, or what's going on. I mean, it just seems like sitting him down would have been the best thing to do. I mean, he plays all out. So, you know, him and Altuve both play so hard, you almost got to save them from themselves.
Yeah, no, and Gomez, I just put him on the DL. I mean, well, I don't understand. You're not contending. Just put him on the DL and, you know, at least get him right. If you're trying to trade him, you're putting him out there at 60%. You know, he's been all right for, you know, what he's gone through this year, but it's definitely frustrating as a fantasy owner. Right? And it just makes sense to me, at least, to just throw him on the DL and let him get right. But, you know, such is the life. But talking about Altuve, do you want to dig into him a little bit deeper, maybe? You know, talk about, you know, he got off to a really hot start, and, you know, especially you and I, we had conversation on Twitter with people, you know, talking about how Jose Altuve has reached a new threshold for performance. And, you know, last year, and you and I were both saying, well, you know, Altuve was great last year, but, you know, his numbers from 2014 just aren't repeatable. And, you know, that was kind of mitigated by the fact that he got off to a monster start again. And then I was like, well, you know what, maybe this is just who he is now. But he's cooled considerably since, and I'm sure the injury has a little bit to do with that. But even before that, he was still kind of the same guy. What do you think about Altuve moving forward if he gets healthy?
Well, he was slumping before the injury, and, you know, his year last year was phenomenal, but it was very BABIP driven, and that's why you and I both had reservations about, you know, him repeating that batting average. I mean, I think, you know, things are normalizing now. I don't know, you know, the year before in 2013 he hit .283. In 2012, he hit .290, and now he's hitting .285. I mean, I really think he's more of a .290, .295 hitter than he is the .360 from last year. So, you know, just normalize. I mean, he's going to steal bases. He's going to score runs. You know, the home runs, he's hit 7 or 5 each of the last. Right now, he's at 5. He had 7 last year, 5 2013, 7. You know, that. Be realistic. 7 home runs. You know, about 60 RBIs is his max, although if he bats third, that'll go up a little bit. You know, the 80 runs is nice, but plan on the batting average at .295. I mean, he's a solid second-round pick. I just have reservations about taking him in the first.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. It's, you know, if he did take Altuve in the second round, I mean, it's not a total loss. I mean, you know, even if he produces what he produced in 2013, which was .283 batting average, 35 steals, and 64 runs, which is kind of low, but, I mean, it's not a total loss. So, you know, I think you can kind of hang your hat on that a little bit, but you're right. I think we were seeing this year what he really is, and, you know, if you look at his career numbers, you look at 2012 through this year, the outlier is certainly 2014. He's at 18 steals right now. Do you think he gets to 40?
I don't know, with the hamstring issues and batting third, if he stays at third, that'll kind of limit that a little bit. I think 35 will be his max this year.
So then we're looking at 2013, which was, like I just said, .283, 35 steals, which, you know, it's great for a second baseman, but not quite the follow-up on the 2014 that some people thought.
No.
So... yeah, this is a fun one, actually. Cole Hamels and Johnny Cueto. Who do you think brings more in trade? What do you think? And where do you think each one of them goes if you had to? If you were making a bet today.
If I had to make a bet today, I say Hamels ends up in St. Louis because I think they match up best with their prospects. I don't think LA is going to add him there if they're going to try and sign Greinke back. So I think that would cause a struggle there. I think LA would rather have Cueto, which would be a one-year rental, or see if they could sign him after, as opposed to Hamels, who signed through 2018 with an option. So the interesting thing was Jason Stark in his article about the trade deadline, obviously, you know, moving more into the forefront as July approaches, is he thinks that Cueto and Chapman are going to go on a package deal to L.A.
Wow.
That gives them a 1-2 punch, just like the Yankees have with Miller and Betances, with Chapman and Jansen, and it would allow them to slot Cueto into that rotation. If that happened, you have to think Zach Lee's going to Cincinnati if that was to come about. There's been talk about Alex Guerrero. Obviously, you know, he's not playing in L.A., so at least, you know, he could slot right into the left field spot for Cincinnati. And I would have to think there would be another prospect or two to go in that sort of a deal. But it does make sense on both ends. You know, L.A. does have tons of minor league talent that they could unload. And if they could get two pieces like that to really push them over the top, I think they would keep, you know, the old school Friedman Rays model of strong pitching, strong bullpen, and piece together the offense.
Yeah, I was actually personally wrong about the Dodgers' moves this offseason. They worked out really well. I mean, with the exception of Jimmy Rollins there, but Howie Kendrick's been really good for them. And, you know, I was kind of hard on them moving camp and stuff, but now we see why they did that. But in looking at Cole Hamels, you've got to think that Amaro is dangling Hamels out there, but you have to take Ryan Howard too. And I think that would make the most sense. And I think, again,
why St. Louis slots in well, because
right,
they could use
exactly
Howard at first base with Reynolds and have a natural platoon.
Right. Yeah, and I think that just in general is probably the thought that's where I would hedge my bets if I were a betting man, because like you said, they can put Ryan Howard at first base half the time. But Cueto is kind of different. I don't know if, you know, if you've
well,
heard
Kansas
the
City's been kicking the tires on him already, too.
Yeah, right,
you know,
right. And I think
it's either going to be Cueto and Chapman to the L.A. thing like Stark is saying, or it's going to be Cueto to maybe like Kansas City in a surprise deal, and then Chapman could still end up with the Nationals if there's still Jones in them. It just depends on who's going to give up
right
the most in those scenarios.
Right, yeah. And I think it's pretty obvious the most need for a starting pitcher is Kansas City. They get the fewest innings out of their starting staff in baseball, so. And like you said, I was going to mention that Washington was kicking the tires on Aroldis Chapman. So I'm with you. I think, you know, because obviously Hamels doesn't want to go to Houston. It's already been made note of. But I think Hamels and Ryan Howard go to the Cardinals, and then Cueto goes to – I'm gonna guess Kansas City, because I think they're in it. I think that they – you know, the city is definitely revived, and I think that would be a big boost to them.
That would be a big blow to Detroit if Kansas City did that. I mean, the biggest problem for Detroit is that they need starting pitching, but they've gutted their farm system to the point where they're going to have to take like a third option pitcher. You know, they can't
right
just go out and get they can't compete with Kansas City, L.A., St. Louis, Washington with their farm system to try and make any of these trades.
Yeah, and who would Kansas City send back in a potential Cueto deal, Greg? What do you think about that?
I don't know. They have some options down there, but a lot of their best arms were injured, so I don't know if a Zimmer or something of that line would be enough. So,
yeah.
But I don't know how much the Reds can expect with Cueto being a free agent. So I mean, the longer they hold him, I would think the less they're going to get. So I would think the Reds would want to move him. If he has a good start on Friday, I would really get him on the speed block. The more they hold him, the more risk they run with if anything pops up with his elbow or anything else. They got to strike when the fire's hot.
Agreed. Yeah, that elbow is definitely something to keep an eye on with Cueto. And they did push his start back. I think I'm pretty sure it was this week, just to kind of
yeah, from Tuesday to Friday. Yeah.
Yeah, that's smart for them. But on that same note with the Reds. Do you think Todd Frazier goes anywhere, or do you think they're gonna keep him?
No, I don't think they would trade Frazier. He's a fan favorite. That would really. Yeah, I know Mets fans were kind of clamoring. They're not gonna trade Frazier to the Mets. You know, as much as I like to bang on the Mets, I mean, there is not a ton of offense on the market. But at the same token, they could have done a better job in the offseason with their free agent approach. You know, I think everybody knew that Kadire was kind of aging and coming from Colorado just wasn't going to have the impact. Just because he was David Wright's buddy doesn't mean you sign him. And I think that was almost one of those backdoor, like, okay, we'll go get your buddy sort of a deals. And that's not how you do things. You got to do it smart.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You can't win baseball with your heart or fantasy. You gotta be able to look at it and be rational. Now,
fair enough.
Did you see the thing today where the Dodgers declined having Corey Seager play in the Futures game?
I did not see that.
Well, that's why I had the promotion imminent on there, because baseball wanted Corey Seager to play in the future showcase, and the Dodgers said that he wouldn't be able to attend. So there's got to be something going on with him soon.
Interesting. Now,
yeah. I mean, do you think the Dodgers would really – do you think they would just cut Rollins? I mean, they can. They have the money.
See, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's always possible. I don't know. That would be kind of a bold move. I mean, do you think that's a move that's in the holster?
It depends. I mean, you're not going to promote Seager to have him watch. You know, they've been using Kiki Hernandez the last couple of days too. Not only has he been getting a little time at shortstop, he's been batting leadoff the last couple of games too. So, I mean, you know, Kiki Hernandez is a nice player, but he's a role player. I don't think he's a long-term solution at leadoff or at shortstop for the Dodgers.
Yeah, you're right. The Dodgers always have issues. They've always got a whole cast of guys. This always seems to happen. But that would be awesome if Corey Seager was promoted. He's the last big, real big prospect that we haven't seen yet this year, I think. That's definitely something
to
keep an eye on.
If nothing happens in the next day or two, I think this is the last chance if you're in, like, a deeper league and he's out there to stash him for a buck or two this weekend. It's probably the last opportunity you're going to have to do that.
Yeah, thanks for updating me on that. I didn't hear that. Cool. So, Ian Desmond, I'll let you start here, but I'm sure you looked him over pretty quickly. But what do you think the rest of the way? What do you think we see out of him? He did hit a home run today, and he did have a walk off sack fly yesterday. Do you think those couple of events will kind of get him right?
I'm hoping. You know, this is the first year I've ever owned him, and I have him in that same head to head league where I have Jose Fernandez, and that team has just been majorly underachieving. So if Desmond could turn his season around, that would be a big help. The nice thing was the home runs to right center. It was contacted pretty well, and he actually made a couple of nice defensive plays today too, turned a nice double play during the game. So I'm hoping that he can turn it around. I know you did an article on him, so I'll let you get into the nuts and bolts of him a little deeper here.
Well, what's ironic is that I was talking to Paul Hartman from the Fantasy Assembly on Twitter the other day, and he and I were both first-time Desmond owners as well. So, you know, it's been brutal, to say the least. But he's the only player in pro ball to have 20-20 seasons over the past 3 years. So, you know, that's kind of the consistency you're looking for, especially out of a shortstop, and that's what made him a second or third-round pick, depending on your league. But for me, just looking at the numbers, it doesn't look, and hopefully I'm wrong, and maybe I am wrong considering the events of the last 2 days, but, you know, it doesn't look to me like there's going to be a big bounce back coming here. His batted ball stuff just looks bad. You know, he's just hacking at everything. He's hacking at tons of pitches outside the zone. He looks lost. And even when he had that walk-off yesterday, it was like, yeah, well, whatever. I know I'm hurting my team, and especially on defense. This is so terrible. I don't know if you saw it, but they were doing the chocolate, whatever thing they do, where they pour the chocolate all over his head and stuff, and he wasn't smiling at all, and he just looked like he was just kind of shell-shocked. It was weird, but, his contact, the rates at which he makes hard contact down, soft contact up, all that bad stuff. But hopefully he turns it around. Hopefully the walk-off kind of sparks him. Like you said, it was nice to see him hit that home run today. But, you know, the Zips projection and the Steamer projection, they still have him, you know, to pace for, you know, double-digit homers and steals over the rest of the season, more or less. If he does do that, you're going to be getting a big-time second half out of Desmond. So you could go out and, you know, kind of throw a super low offer out there for him, and, you know, no one would call you crazy. But to me, it doesn't look like there's a major turnaround coming ahead here. But maybe I'm wrong.
Hasn't he been a slow starter in the past?
He has, but not to the degree that it's
not to
basically
this level.
July.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's been, you know, April and maybe into May, but almost into July. He's got it going the latest in early June the past couple of seasons. So, you know, if he does turn it around, you know, you're going to be getting what you thought you're going to be getting. It's just going to only come over half of the season, and, you know, that'll be fine because that's what we have to go here. So another guy I wrote about yesterday was Charlie Blackmon, and he's the total opposite of Desmond. He's shown basically improvements across the board, for me anyway. So what do you think about Charlie Blackmon? And coming into the season, where were you at on him? Did you think last year was kind of just a facade?
I didn't think last year was a fluke, but I was nervous about his second half last year carrying over into this year. But he's been able to stay pretty consistent. I mean, I think Charlie Blackmon is who Charlie Blackmon is. And as long as you're drafting him to be a 270-2020 guy, then you're good to go. And there's a lot of value in that, in knowing that he can do that. So I was a little bit wrong on Blackmon, and I'm happy to admit it, but he's definitely been worth where he was drafted this year. As a matter of fact, he's probably still a bargain. So, you know, people were of the same boat where they were kind of hesitant to take him. So those that jumped up to get him are still cashing in on the value. And I could be a little wrong with a 2020. He might be more of a 18-30 guy, but there's nothing wrong with that in this day and age, especially hitting leadoff for Colorado.
I think you're dead on with that. The 18-30 is about where the projections have him and about where I see him going. The two big stats I saw with Blackmon that kind of jumped off the page were his offerings at outside pitches, pitches outside of the strike zone. Last season, he offered 39% of those pitches. And this season, that number is all the way down to 25.7%. So there's a huge difference in his ability to read the strike zone and his ability to lay off pitches outside the zone. And another thing with him is that his infield fly last year was really bad at 13.1%. This year it's all the way down to 2.8%. And you couple those things with, you know, hard hit is way up, soft hit is way down, and you look at, you know, his average fly is up something like 25 feet this year to just under 300 feet. So, and also he's walking more. To me, it looks like last year was a breakout and it just clicked. Even though we did have that tough second half, which is the only real concern I have with Blackmon moving forward, is that, you know, since last year was his first full go at it in the major leagues, hopefully that mitigates the fact that he did tail off in the second half. But, you know, his end of season numbers, I think, are going to look really good again. But like I said, the only thing I would have concern with Blackmon again is that poor second half he had last year. But otherwise,
yeah, that could have just been his adjustment period. So, you know,
yeah, right.
If he's swinging at less pitches outside, then he's making those adjustments. That's probably what he was chasing in the second half last year. So the scouting reports were doing that again, and now he's laying off them. So, you know, the league may adjust to him again. He may have to adjust back, but I don't
think.
Well,
that's the thing.
Yeah, I don't see him tailing off in the second half like last year. That was probably the whole reason what you were just talking about.
And, I mean, even if – so his second half last year was 264, 314, 384, five homers, 10 steals. I mean, even if you double that and you put a full season of 264, 10 homers, 20 steals, you still have a fringy, you know, mixed league player anyway. So like I said, if he can, you know, if he can continue what he's doing, he's probably going to be a top 10 outfielder, if not very close to it. One more thing with Blackman, though, is that he's getting attacked the same way. The pitches he's seeing and the percentage of which he's seeing them is almost identical to what he saw last year. So I think there is a league adjustment coming to him soon, and I think his ability to adapt to that will be the reason why he either continues to do this the rest of the season or he has another maybe down second half. So it's going to be interesting to see. But, you know, if you took Blackman at his ADP, which is like 130 on ESPN, kudos, because that's all the profit.
Yeah.
So Brett Gardner,
yeah.
Again, go ahead. Do you have anything else to say?
Well, I was saying our boy Jim Finch was all over Blackman in the preseason. I kind of scoffed at it, but he was dead on.
Yeah, no, the same way with me. You know, I wrote in the column, and it was funny. Like, I was seeing, you know, even at my own drafts, it was like Charlie Blackman would get taken in, like, the seventh round. I was just like, oh, that is such a sucker pick. But, you know, and that's another thing. I think it's a case of the people who took Blackman just looked at his numbers from last year and just assumed that, you know, they were what they were. I think it's a lot like Prince Fielder. It's just like, you're like, well, I'll take Prince Fielder, and then he does what he's been doing. So I think it's not to take anything away from the people who drafted Blackman because you're the ones reaping the rewards, but I think there's a lot of that going around, and, you know, that's great. I wish I had made the pick.
It's easy to overthink this game.
Yeah, it is. It really is. But you just got to go with your numbers, and you got to go with your reads. And I know that's something you've been trying to do more and more this year. Just kind of go with what it is. Although Matt Latos had not a terrible start yesterday, but he got hit by the home run.
Five runs on three hits. Come on.
Yeah, I know.
He made like two bad pitches.
I know.
Cost him five runs.
Did you happen to notice where his velocity was at all? Or?
What's that?
Did you happen to notice where Latos' velocity was at last night? Did you watch the game or anything?
No, I didn't get to watch that game. So we'll see. I'll check later. I think his velocity is still held firm. I think he was still
looks like
the velocity's back, so he might be okay. You know, he's just mitigated by being a Marlin. That's going to be the same thing that Jose Fernandez is going to go through. I mean, Jose Fernandez can come back and pitch great, but you know, ask Matt Harvey and a bunch of the guys on the Mets who've had great games. If the team scores one run, it doesn't matter how well you pitch. If you give up two, it's tough.
Yeah, well, they've got Juan Carlos Stanton hitting the home run every night. So, I mean, at least there's that if you're a Mountain fan.
How many teams are going to pitch to him if they pitch to him when they're ahead, not behind?
I know, and that's the problem, that the Marlins are always behind. So let's talk about another guy who's
fourth.
Stanton?
Yeah. Why wouldn't he not be batting third? Why is he not batting every time that he gets an opportunity to? That makes no sense to me. Why would you have a first inning where Giancarlo Stanton doesn't hit?
I know. Yeah, that's stupid. Mind-boggling.
I think yesterday he led off all four at-bats. For every at-bat yesterday, he was the leadoff hitter at the inning. And you can't do that to Stanton. I mean, we're lucky he hit the home run, but it's like, if he's leading off every inning, his walk percentage is just going to go through the roof. They've got to hit him third.
Yeah, I'm with you. I actually hadn't realized that they've been hitting him cleanup.
The last couple of days.
Not intelligent. Another player who's been pretty much hitting a home run every day, well, not every day, but got four over the past week or so, is Brett Gardner. Another guy, it's like a late career, not a late career, but more of a late-ish middle part of. Yeah. He's hitting home runs, stealing bases, kind of. Not the 40 steal guy he once was, but batting average is up. And, you know, Saris was talking about him on their podcast the other day, and he was talking about basically how the improvements are real. And I haven't had time to do my own research on the matter, but maybe you have. Do you have any thoughts on Brett Gardner moving forward here? Does he hit 20 home runs?
I don't know. I think he'll cap off at like 18, but he does a little bit of everything, and he's almost of the same ilk as Charlie Blackman, where he can get you 15, 18 home runs. He can steal 30 bases. He's going to score a bunch of runs for the Yankees. And his stats just kind of surprise you. It's like, oh, I can't take Brett Gardner here. And then it's like, well, wait a minute, maybe I should have. You know, people are always chasing the high upside, and then we sometimes ignore the solid statistics. And I think Gardner's just a solid play, and I think he's underrated every year. And you know, and like I said, that's why, you know, him and Blackmon are so similar. That they're like 275 average guys, but, you know, they can fill stuff across the five categories. You know, even their RBIs aren't super low. So, you know, it's just a matter of where they are in the draft. But, you know, him and Blackmon are definitely overlooked this year.
Man, imagine an outfield where, let's say you did an alternative strategy where you just waited on outfield and you avoided the guys like Carlos Gomez, and then you wound up with Charlie Blackmon and Brett Gardner. I mean, you're looking pretty. I mean, Brett Gardner is, you know, a guy that I wasn't necessarily avoiding, but not one that I was seeking out either. Just kind of wasn't on my radar, and getting proved wrong again. He had a big year last year. Batting average aside, which 256 is still fine in this day and age, he's gonna be right there again. Probably the same thing, I think, with a few more steals. So you're probably looking at like a 17 or 18 home run season with 35 or so steals anyway, and the batting average is up, which is great.
Yeah, he's a little streaky, but you ride him out, you know.
Yeah. Just like Blackmon. I mean, if you're able to get Gardner, kudos to you, because definitely a guy I overlooked, and not flashy, but getting that job done, which is good. Have you noticed that are his homers being pulled? I would assume they are, Greg. Pulling most of his homers, I assume he is, but
yes, when he gets to the Yankee Stadium, he yanks into that short porch.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
he can go the opposite way, but that's more when he's hitting a double. That's not. He's willing to go to left field, but those are singles and doubles. When he hits for power, it's usually to right and right center.
He leads baseball in opposite field hit percentage too, which is great. So a guy with a power and speed, power to the pull side at home, and you know, great spraying ability. I mean,
that's nice. You know, if it's outside, he slaps it the other way and takes a single. If it's inside, he can turn on it. You know, that's it.
Yeah.
That's if you can do that at any level, you're going to be successful.
Yeah, I agree.
So Beltre's trying to get my son to hit the outside pitch. He fights me on it.
He does. He wants to pull that one over the. Is he a right-handed hitter?
Yeah. He sometimes he'll roll it over the shortstop instead of, you know, the other day he hit a nice line drive to right field and it was like a shot, but right at the right fielder, like the kid didn't have to move, but it was like a frozen line drive. I'm like, listen, you make outs like that, you do them all day. I go, if you roll that over the shortstop, that's when I get angry. I said, you know what? If you can hit the pitch wherever it's pitched, then you become tough to pitch too, you know what I mean? So
right.
I was like, you know,
yeah.
At his age right now, the 13-year-olds, all these kids are taught to pitch to the outside corner. So if you drive that ball the other way, then you're going to get the inside pitch you want. So even if you hit that line drive to right and get out, if you want to pull a ball, you're going to get it your next time and turn on it. You know, I was like, you're always setting up the pitcher. So he's getting there.
That's awesome, actually, because, you know, you know, there's a lot of parents out there who have kids that play baseball. You know, the parents want to see, get up there, and they want to see them hit a home run, or they want to see him pull the ball down the line or whatever it is. So your son's got a unique perspective, because it's not like modern fantasy writers like us. It's not like we just look at box scores anymore. You know, we're doing things like that. And so he's got a jump start, I think, over a lot of the kids he plays with, because his dad knows a thing or two about baseball. So that's really cool.
I'm hoping. Well, he actually has a very natural swing to right side. So like when he's hitting to right center, I know he's locked in. So at early in the weekend, he wasn't playing well at the tournament. And then we went this soft toss. And the next game, he had like two hits. I was like, you know, anytime you struggle, go up the middle. I mean, that's always your way.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So Adrian Beltre is back.
He's just a freak. How 2 days ago he couldn't hold a bat, and now he's playing.
Right. I don't know what we're expecting from him though, and he's not 100%. So they activated him before he was really ready to go. I don't know. I wasn't drafting Beltre coming into the season. That you know, now you've got a 36-year-old Beltre with a thumb that's less than 100%. What do you expect from Beltre moving forward?
Well, we were definitely in agreement on that coming into the season. I have zero stock of Beltre just because where his draft position was, and you could see the numbers trending, you know, it was just a matter of time. I don't know. I don't know how long this bump can really hold up. I'm curious to see if in the next week or two, you know, he can't hold the bat or something crops up again, because the thumbs are tricky. I mean, we saw the trouble that the thumb gave Dustin Pedroia, who, like Beltre, is arguably one of the toughest guys in baseball. So, yeah, I'm nervous. So if I had Beltre stock while he's back now, if I could unload him, I would definitely do it. And then it also is going to have a ripple effect as to what happens with Joey Gallo, because does he get squeezed out when Josh Hamilton comes back? I think he can come back next week.
Joey Gallo has 4 hits in his last 7 games, hasn't homered since June 17th. But if you weren't expecting,
I mean,
Gallo
is not the worst thing for him.
Right. If you weren't expecting Gallo to go through these stretches, then you were doing it wrong. A rookie with strikeout problems. We've talked about this. A rookie with strikeout problems and big time power. These things happen. You know, there's going to be. He was actually dropped in one of my leagues today, and I'm going to add him. It's a keeper league as well. So these things happen, and you know, he's going to go through stretches like this. I mean, it is what it is. You know, power hitters that have been in the league for 20 years go through stretches like this. So not concerned at all about Gallo as far as performance, because you know, we knew this was coming. But in regards to Beltre, the news is not good for me anyway. You know, when you see things like, you know, the coaching staff was telling him that it's going to hurt and he's not going to be 100%, you know, I think this is a situation where we saw Corey Dickerson come off the DL for 3 days, re-aggravate the injury, and then they have to put him back on the DL. I would not be surprised to see that Beltre maybe re-aggravated the injury and, you know, has to miss some time here coming in the future. So I think you're absolutely right. I would be trying to unload Beltre right now if I could, you know, while he's quote-unquote healthy and in the lineup, but I'm not optimistic. No more optimistic than I was in the offseason about Beltre. So with that said, I don't have an update on Josh Hamilton. I haven't seen anything on him. Do you have anything?
No, like I said, everything has him in place coming back, I think, to start next week. So whether, I don't know if they open on Monday or Tuesday, but I think he can open. I think he's on track to come back then. So I would assume he get minor league at bats this weekend. But I'll track that going forward.
What do you think happens with Gallo? I mean, assuming Beltre...
I think they'll send him down, but if Beltre gets hurt, then he's obviously going to have a chance to come right back. That might almost be perfect for Gallo. If he gets down, goes down for a week or two, works on his swing, then if Beltre has anything happen, he can come back up and reassume the third base slot. It would just make their lineup so left-handed.
So you do think that Gallo is the candidate to go when Hamilton comes back, though? Assuming
I would think so, especially if he can go down and just get some, you know, you don't want Gallo in the majors if he's not playing. You know, they can platoon with Rua and do whatever else out in the outfield. Lewis would be the right-hand complement to Hamilton, you know, because you've got Fielder, DH, and Moreland at first. But, you know, like I said, I think part of the reason they pushed Beltre back so soon was because of the left-hand lean of that lineup. It's so left-handed.
That is true. In the league that Gallo got dropped, actually, we have an NA slot, which is used for minor leaguers or, you know, Breivman or any of those guys. So I have Corey Seager on my NA slot right now. So that'd be great if Seager got activated, I would be able to, because I have a drop. So I have Brett Cecil on that team. So I can drop Cecil in, you know, the event that Seager comes up, I can add Gallo. And then if Gallo gets demoted, I can drop him on the NA slot and then activate Corey Seager. So that would be ideal.
There you go.
And nice. Hopefully nobody in my league is listening right now. Because the whole plan was just given away. But I'm actually thinking out loud, and that actually works really well. So, you know, maybe it is good for Gallo to go down and get his swing right. But we'll see. It'll be interesting. You know, these things work themselves out. Hamilton, you know, could easily have a setback. Beltre could easily have a setback, and Gallo could spend the rest of the season in the minors and, you know, do it without having to go back down to the minor leagues at any point. So, That'll work itself out. Gallo, I would not be concerned, you know, with the cold streak here.
Yeah. All right, let's get the Padres and White Sox. Houston is rumored to be kicking the tires on Jeff Samardzija, and to me that makes sense because Samardzija is used to pitching in a hitter's environment, and he's in the American League right now, and I think that would actually give him a little boost because it's hard to win games and with the White Sox right now. So, you know, that could be a win-win. You add someone who's actually starting to pitch better. His 4.53 ARA is also accompanied by a 3.67 FIP. His strikeouts have been coming up, and he actually has 84 strikeouts to 17 walks this year. So, I mean, it's not pitching terrible. I think that would be a really good move for them. I just don't know what Houston would be giving up because I don't think that trading John Singleton for Samardzija doesn't make sense. So it would have to be a different prospect.
Yeah, Singleton doesn't make sense for Chicago. But I did see that. And that would be a really, really good, you know, maybe fallback option for the Astros if they're not able to get Johnny Cueto. And I was noticing that after allowing 15 earned runs in his first two starts of June, and those were horrible starts, he's thrown Samardzija three straight quality starts, and he's got a 21-2 K to walk ratio. He's looked a lot better of late, and that's really good to see. You know, and like you said, the strikeouts, he hasn't struck out seven batters in a game since the end of May. And then the only time before that was his first start of May. So good to see him striking out batters, and I think Samardzija would be a perfect fit there. Like you said, you know, he's had experience pitching in offensively kind of, you know, powered, you know, parks. And, you know, it's we knew how good he was in the NL when he was with the Cubs. So Samardzija would be a really good get for Houston. And I think mm-hmm. that's something that's probably realistic. So I'm with you there. I think that would be
a
really good get.
That. Their rotation needs a third. They need a third pitcher if they're going to try and make the playoffs.
And on top of that, it's one of those things where it's like they don't have to go all in because they do have a really, really young team. And getting Samardzija would be a one-year thing, you know. So mm-hmm. it's not like they would have to give up the farm to go get a Johnny Cueto or something like that. So I think Samardzija would be actually preferable, you know, for them to kind of not really go completely all in and give up, you know, the future here, but to do enough to stabilize that rotation and get a guy that, you know, has success pitching in the National League. So that would be good. The Mets promoted Max.
It looks like he's going to come up and start Sunday against the Reds.
Yep, that news is all over Twitter today, so if you missed that, Max is promoted. So if you've got him, you know, obviously you can activate him for that start. And if you don't, and he's still available in your league, obviously, you know, you should have grabbed him a week and a half ago. But go get Max if he's, you know, still available in your league. It looks like the Mets are going to go with a six-man rotation, Greg. Is that what you were seeing, too?
Yeah, they're back to that. I really think they want to try and save Harvey's bullets and, you know, Syndergaard, and, you know, it just kind of falls in line, especially when you look at Matt's. You know, in 2013 he threw 106 innings, in 2014 he threw 140 innings, and this year he's already thrown 90. So I think you want to. You want to get starts with him at the major league level, but you don't want to overextend his arm. So the six-man rotation in that scenario does make some sense.
I'm with you. Yeah, I think if it's my organization, I can't be too upset at them for wanting to do that because, you know, we've already seen what they've gone through with Wheeler, and they just, you know, I don't know. The Mets are very interesting to me because they don't hit, but their pitching is just so good.
But unlike Tampa Bay, they don't seem to be able to add like somebody to get those timely hits. You know, at least Tampa Bay sprinkled in some bats. I mean, the Mets. I mean, if they get Murphy's coming back, he should be back either this weekend or at the beginning of next week. Hopefully, Travis d'Arnaud is only out for them. I mean, missing those two bats is huge. I really don't think you can plan on David Wright at this point. But you know. Getting those two guys, they get Flores over to second base like they were talking about. They can put Murphy at third, and you get d'Arnaud back in there. At least that helps. But that, you know, they just really did not address that outfield, is what we talked about earlier.
Are the Mets going to make the playoffs, Greg?
They could pitch their way into it, but unless they get a bat or two, no.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Unless, barring some blockbuster trade, I don't think so either. But they've got a nice
unless they're
going to
win, unless they're going to win like 40 games at 2-1 the rest of the way, it's going to be really
right.
tough.
Yeah, but they've got a nice building block here for the next several seasons. So if they can get some offense, put some offense together, that team's going to be good as soon as next year, probably. So we saw J.D. Martinez hit 3 home runs, driving 6. He's homeward in back-to-back games. Now he's up to 17 home runs on the season. I was completely wrong on J.D. Martinez, and I'm willing to admit it, completely, completely wrong. Where were you at?
Because you said the batting average is going to regress, which it has, but
yeah, okay,
you know, he's hitting 270, which is fine. I think that's I think that was a realistic. I think we were in agreement that he was going to trend back to like a 260, 270 hitter, which is right where he's at. But the power is just not going away. You know, the funniest tweet I saw today was Martinez has 9 home runs in June, which is more than Mickey, V. Martin, Cespedes combined.
Wow.
Combined.
That's wild,
all of them.
Yeah, that's wild.
You know, he's on a heater, and we saw this last year. He gets on hot streaks, and he can maintain them. But, you know, he's on pace for a pretty good amount of home runs. I mean, what do you think over under 35?
Under, because I still want to save some of my pride and say that at least I don't know. But I say he gets like 32, 33. What do you think?
I think 32 is a pretty good number. I would have gone under on 35, but I'll probably go over on 30. So those are probably good numbers to run on. But, you know, even if his average slides back a little bit to like 265, you're going to take that if he's hit 32 home runs.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's kind of overshadowed Cespedes, because everybody thought Cespedes was going to be the benefactor of all this. But it's been Martinez holding his ground.
So we'll end the show, well, maybe, if we might have a minute or two after, but Jason Hayward, I dropped Jason Hayward for Billy Burns, and we talked about this last week with Seth Klein on the show. I made that drop, and immediately after that drop, Hayward has gone nuts.
But Burns is on a 15-game hitting streak.
No, I know. Billy Burns is fine. But if I drop, Greg, you don't understand. If I drop, after all these years, if I drop Jason Hayward, the day before he was going to break out, I don't know what I'll do with myself. you know what I mean, though? I've owned him every year, Greg, since he's been in the league.
What's funny is I have him in my home keeper league, and I was thinking about 2 weeks ago just cutting him loose because I had him for – I'm not going to keep him for next year, I figure. So I'm like, I might as well drop him and get a guy to stash like Dalton Pompey or somebody else. I can put him away for like a dollar. And I was like, well, you know what, I'm a little short in the outfield, so I'll hang on. And all of a sudden, he's exploded the last 2 weeks. So, thankfully, I was patient. But I don't think you could have made a bad move with what you did there. You know, it's all team-based and need. But, you know, whether he can sustain it or not is the other.
4 homers and 2 steals with a .410 batting average over his last 8. He's up to 9 homers and 8 steals on the season. He's up to 9 homers and 8 steals on the season. He's currently within ESPN Player Rater's top 30 outfielders. If this continues, Greg, you might not hear from you for a while. So just so you know, put that on watch if something. If this really happens, I don't. Yeah, I don't know what I'll do, but
we'll keep an eye on it.
We'll end it there. Greg, appreciate it as always. We'll be back next week at 8 o'clock next Thursday. With episode 15, you can follow Greg on Twitter at GJew@9. You can follow me on Twitter at TKing978. And you can follow the site at MyKnuckleballs. Greg and I write at least a few articles a week, every week for the site, so you can check those out. Greg, enjoy your weekend. Have a good night.
You too. Thank you, Tim.